remarks of the President at Symphony Hall, Boston, Massachusetts, Friday, October 17th, 1952.
Thank you. Thank you. Thank you very much. I appreciate very, very much this welcome in the great city of Boston. It makes me think of another night in the great city of Boston when I had the same sort of reception, and I hope I'll get the same sort of result as a result tonight as I did then. Governor, Mr. Chairman, it is, of course, always a pleasure for me to come to Boston, and I hope you let me come back when I'm out of a job. This year, I'm not asking for votes for myself, but I want your votes for the Democratic Party just as much, if not more, than I did in 1948. When I leave the White House next January 20th, I want to be able to turn over the duties of my great office to a man who is worthy to lead this nation during the next 4 years, and that man is Adlai Stevenson. I hope at the same time you will send Jack Kennedy to the Senate to work with him. I know you will send my old friend John McCormick back to his job as Majority Leader in this House of Representatives. And I want you to elect to the House of Representatives that fine group of new Democratic candidates for Congress, Frederick Hayler, Thomas O'Neill, and David J. Crowley. Now, it's a very difficult situation for a president, and I'm speaking from experience, when he has a contrary Congress, although I won the election on account of the fact that I did have one, but I want to give the new president a chance to do the job and put his program through. I know you're going to continue your progressive and constructive state government by re-electing my good friend Paul Dever and the whole Democratic ticket. I'm going to spend a little time tonight talking to you about a self-styled crusade. Of course, it's not unusual to call a campaign a crusade, but in this case, the military analogy is being carried just a little too far. The leader of the crusade has announced that the model for his crusaders is to be Oliver Cromwell and his roundheads. Well, Oliver Cromwell may have had his points, but his crusade, as I recall it, was one that started out as a matter of principle and finished up by destroying parliamentary government and butchering women and children. God save us from a crusade like that. That suggests that it is easier to start a crusade than it is to control it, particularly when a lot of fanatics are enrolled in the ranks, and tonight I want to take a good look at some of the fanatics that are enrolled in the great Republican crusade of 1952. We Democrats have good reason to be on our guard against fanaticism in a political campaign. The last time fanaticism was injected into a presidential campaign, deliberately and on a national scale, was in 1928. In that campaign, the Democratic Party was led by one of the finest men this country ever produced, Alfred E. Smith. As the liberal and progressive governor of New York, throughout the period of reactionary Republican rule in Washington, He had already pointed out the path that the New Deal and the Fair Deal were to follow after 1932. You people of Boston don't have to be reminded of the tactics that were used to defeat Al Smith in 1928. It was the most disgraceful and un-American campaign in the history of the country. Now, I am sincerely hoping that the present one doesn't set a new low, but I'm afraid that's just what's happening. The opposition party has been desperately searching for an issue these past 4 years. But the country is strong and firm and prosperous. We're making progress in security, opportunity, and the enjoyment of our civil rights. Abroad, the country has moved to meet the greatest danger to world civilization that we have ever seen. We have built the ramparts of the free world and helped to man them. We have checked and frustrated the communist plans for world conquest without bringing on World War III. Now, my friends, these are tremendous achievements of which this generation may well be proud. So what have the Republicans dragged up as an issue? It is so contrary to the facts as to be preposterous. It is the false charge that this administration, this party, your Democratic Party, has been soft toward communism. Outside the lie factory of the Kremlin itself, it would be hard to find a more fantastic perversion of the truth. I'm sure you could go around the world talking to every person you met, from Ireland to Japan, and you wouldn't find a single one who thought that the Democratic Party was soft on communism until you got back in this country and talked to a Republican. I can tell you truthfully, that is not what the people of Europe think. It is not what the people of Africa or Asia think. All around the world, the free nations acknowledge us as the leaders in the resistance to communism. I assure you, the Russians do not think we're soft toward communism. They've been defeated, blocked, and thwarted at every turn of the road. My name and the name of this great party of ours are things they curse and grind their teeth at. And soon they'll be cursing the name of Adlai Stevenson the same way. I don't think the Russians are by any means so sure that the Republican Party means business in this fight against communism. When it comes to speeches, the Republican Party may be way ahead, but when it comes to deeds, their record is far, far behind. It is not the Democrats, but the Republicans in Congress who have been voting to cut aid to the free nations of Europe in this struggle against communism. It is not the Democrats, but the Republicans in Congress who voted more than 6-1 to deny to the little Republic of Korea, almost on the eve of its invasion by the communists, the help that they needed. If there was any act on our part that led the communist leaders to believe they could launch their attack with impunity, it was that vote on the Korean aid bill in 1950. In the light of the world struggle we are engaged in, the Republican talk about our being soft toward communism is surely one of the most desperate fabrications that a desperate party ever put forth. But they put it forth, and they continue to reiterate it. And I suppose the clamor will get even worse before Election Day. They are using the technique of the big lie, the technique developed by Hitler, of advancing a falsehood so monstrous that it stuns the judgment of the listener, and then repeating it again and again in the face of all the evidence to the contrary. And they are using this technique to play upon our legitimate fear and concern about communist infiltration. Now, communist infiltration is, of course, a threat to this country, as it is a threat to all free countries. It is a threat we must be aware of, one that we are aware of, and one that we've been handling through effective security measures for a long time. But it is not something that should make us lose our common sense, lose all faith in our institutions, lose confidence in one another. I think the whole picture has been put very well by General Beadle Smith, who is the head of our Central Intelligence Agency and one of our most important agencies in the struggle against communism. He has said that we must always be on the alert against communist espionage. No matter what precautions we may take, we can never assume that we're entirely safe from it. But he said, our security is not a political matter. And he went on, and I'm going to quote him. Any future president, Republican or Democrat, is going to have to work with the same security agencies now in existence. Both will have the same difficulties that we now encounter today. If either one of them, the Democrat or the Republican, does as well as President Truman in cooperation with the security agencies in ferreting out subversives, the American people can congratulate each other and will have little to worry about.